Hello?
Hello.
Follow up?
Follow up, yes.
I know a couple episodes ago we talked about Ozzy dying finally and then rehashing the fact that I didn't know he was dead for 20 years or wasn't dead for 20 years. So I found that that was sub-rant 46.
Wow.
And the reason I couldn't find it is I misspelled his name.
No way.
Yeah, so I went back and corrected the record. Is now O-Z-Z-Y as opposed to, I think it was O-Z-Z-I-E.
Oh, good. Thank you, James. That's good.
Sure.
So we've been talking about Ozzy since 46, huh?
No, that was just the one time we talked about him. We didn't talk about him before that because I literally thought he was dead.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh my God. Okay.
About 50 episodes without him and about 50 episodes, well, again, without him mostly.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. In the news, President Trump called out the National Guard to curb back the overwhelming violence apparently that's occurring in D.C. I think he did that, 4 years too late?
Sounds like it. Because they're like, the crime is down, 28, almost 30%. Yeah.
I hope this becomes the lasting picture of the Trump presidency, is this little snippet of video of ICE walking down the street in front of the mall in Washington, D.C., and it's just four or five guys, not in matching uniforms, just looks like they, I don't know, literally looks like they were just shopping at the Army-Navy store.
Doesn't it, though?
And they're walking like this is the first time they've ever walked. It's like they're the most awkward-looking group of people I've ever seen in my life.
And you're talking about that post on Blue Sky.
Yeah, and where they're walking. Obviously, we will link to it in the show notes.
Yes.
In my head, I'm thinking, are they LARPing or cosplaying? I'm not sure what line this is. Is this LARPing? Or I think maybe more LARPing than cosplaying, but it's hard
LARPing
to tell. Live action role play.
Oh, live action role play. Yeah, I think it's, or some sick combo of both.
Well, yeah, but you got to draw the line. Which is which?
I don't know.
My response on Blue Sky was, quote, a radical group of parents turned off the Wi-Fi and told their middle-aged sons to go outside for the first time in 20 years.
That was hilarious. That's exactly what it looked like. It probably is LARPing. And all because Big Balls got roughed up. So, you know, send in the militia, right? The response I had, while I thought it was weird, just weird, is like, you know, I can't help but thinking and remembering that a Democratic senator and her husband were murdered in their own home. And a Democratic congressman and his wife were shot and critically wounded in their their home in Minnesota. And the White House response was basically, meh, you know. But Big Balls gets roughed up by a couple of kids who were arrested. The police responded. They were arrested. And we have, like, basically a Reichstag, you know, moment. I mean, really? That's what's going to bring us down?
No,
it's just ridiculous.
I'll tell you what's going to bring us down. The thing that's going to destroy this country,
what?
AOL, is turning off all the last dial-up connections.
I saw that. Who the hell still
that's
uses
it.
Dial-up?
We're done. I don't know. There are several conflicting data points. Some were saying as many as 250,000 people may still be using it.
That's what
others were saying it's probably less than 50,000.
Oh, my God. But my question was, is it more stable than my CenturyLink?
No.
It's like, okay.
No.
I can't imagine, because I have enough problems. We both do with, you know, just shy of fiber optic here. And it's like, my God. Yeah. Okay. I don't think that's a big, you know, I don't think it'll be a huge loss. Excuse me.
No, it's kind of weird, though, that it's kind of hard to put a number on it. At least no one in the media was able to put a number on it. And I'm sure someone in the government, the old government probably knew how many people were using it.
Right.
One detail was that there are some industrial machines are still using, which I thought was interesting. You know, that's industrial machines, though. They're probably still running Windows 3.
Probably. But AOL, does anyone still use AOL? I guess that was
question. Oh, really? Still, there are dozens of them out there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I started with AOL back in the 90s, and because I was sharing my father's AOL account,
and
I ditched them almost immediately because it was so bad. But you know what? It really was. If you go back and look at AOL, it's what Facebook is. Like, we can't get away from this model of the internet. And that's what people want to use. AOL was huge back in the day. And then it was basically replaced by Facebook. People don't want the internet. People just want this weird... It's like a company store for the internet. It's like not the actual internet. It's just this weird place where you can go and see your friends and chat with him, and mm-hmm. but you're sequestered from reality.
Yes.
Another big question we have, Catherine.
What?
That I thought of this week was drone technology versus AI technology. Which is the more transformative?
I don't know. Define transformative, like in a good way or bad way.
Well, no, the one that's going to have more impact on the world. I was leaning toward, and I think this is going to be an ongoing question. We just watch it and see how the space develops. I'm leaning towards drones because they have such an impact on the military and how, well, deliveries too. You know, Amazon delivering via drone.
Yeah. Are they actually doing that?
Yeah. But I think it's less interesting than, I don't want to say that war is interesting, but it's more impactful what's going on in the war. I mean, it obviously is completely dominating the Ukrainian fight with Russia.
Right. I see that. But I think overall, I'd have to take the other side of the coin here and say that it'd be AI merely because of its power to warp reality.
To warp reality. Not, I don't feel like it's warping reality.
I think it is. I think it can. I think it has the power to do that.
Okay, but it has the power. Has it done it yet?
Well, you said ultimately. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, they're changing things. Like they, you know, that movie, Kandaharan, I can't remember the name of it, that we talked about last week. And, you know, AI is, it can change things. And like it can make commercials. And if you don't pay attention to the weird fingers or the lanky arms or whatever, a lot of the stuff is just fake. And since people are so tied up in their wannabe, you know, fake reality and make their reality, you know, overridingly the truth, I think AI can do a lot more damage. I mean, I think they're both probably at this stage.
Yeah, no, here's the difference, though. Drones can do actual damage.
Like, right.
Can kill people and blow things up.
But so can AI by implanting.
No, it can't. It cannot kill people blow things up.
I'm saying, but in a subversive manner, it can instill thoughts in people and change their context, change their reality.
A lot of that is driven by the person, though. If you're engaging in it, it's like you can use a gun to shoot yourself or to shoot someone else.
Well, yeah, of course. But when you're bombarded with nonsense and you can't discern reality from fantasy, I mean, we already have,
alternate reality. That's a sliver of people who are already mentally unstable.
Well, and it seems to be growing. It seems to be overridingly affecting.
It always seems like it's growing because the way media distorts things.
Yeah, I'm off all like media right now. I can't take it. No, just like I do get news off YouTube. I actually watch Don Lemon. I like his show. He does Live at 5. He does 2 live shows a day. And
so
I really appreciate it.
You're not off all media.
I'm not off all media. I'm off like, you know, standard media. Well, I kind of have been since I got rid of Dish and I lost access to like, you know, CNN feed and MSNBC. And my life is better for it, I'll tell you.
Well, as a pickup from the dial-up, that's what these people can turn to. I mean, it's obviously going to be more expensive, but most of the people who are still on dial-up were in rural areas where they don't have access to broadband via cable.
Right.
So they do have satellite and Starlink that they could potentially be using. I don't know if it's feasible for them. And I don't know. My guess is that there really aren't that many. It's probably less than 50,000 people. Less than 50,000 people in the U.S. And that's like a rounding error. I mean, I hate to say it, but you know, we can't keep these things up forever.
Impacting the rural and the possibly.
Yeah, they voted for Trump anyway, so who cares?
Yeah.
Right. There was this great scene, though, in Game of Thrones about power.
Yeah.
Not about internet. They didn't have dial-up internet in Game of Thrones. Had they, that would have been a game changer. The dragons never would have won. A dragon can't fight dial-up.
Right. A dragon can't fight time.
But no, the queen, not the queen, but the evil sister.
Daenerys?
Some guy was talking to her. I don't remember the names. I have no recollection. It's been years since I've watched Game of Thrones.
I know.
But one guy, like one intelligence guy was saying, oh, you know, knowledge is power. And then the woman who actually has the power has him seized and nearly put to death and says, power is power.
Uh-huh.
So that's the thing, the difference between drones and AI. AI is like, okay, yeah, knowledge is power. Yeah, well, you know what's power? Power is power. I can tell these people to kill you and they're going to kill you and then you're dead and that's power. That's real power.
That's very scary, James. I take your point. I understand your point. And at this point for me, I think it's 50-50. I think they're both equally potentially dangerous.
They're both dangerous.
Well, literally level fields of people. You know, I don't know.
And, but, you know, we didn't get to this position where we are culturally and politically through AI. We got through it through Trump, which is like the lack of intelligence.
Right.
So it doesn't take intelligence to or artificial or real to destroy a civilization. Emotions. It just came down to emotions. People are emotional.
I'm doing all I can to understand how we came upon this path.
It's just development, right? I mean, it's just these two technologies have been there, have been worked on for decades, and they finally matured to a point where they are starting to really take off. And that's they've hit their launch point. They've hit the point where they're usable. And now that they're usable, they're being used. And once you start using a technology, it grows rapidly because you start seeing all the use cases of it, and it grows more.
Right.
It's so self-perpetuating or self-propagating at this point.
Yeah,
you can't stop it.
No, we're not going to stop any of this stuff.
So AI, as far as that goes, I think a good test of whether good or bad or how impactful it is is The Wizard of Oz.
Yes. Right? What'd you think of that?
I'm just saying they've used AI to recreate The Wizard of Oz, the movie, into a three-dimensional experience for the dome in Las Vegas.
Right, the Sphere.
Which is mind-boggling. I don't know how you take a picture. I understand how you could like upscale a picture to go from regular screen to like IMAX or shoot for IMAX initially. But then trying to take a film, a two-dimensional film.
Yes.
And project it in basically a three-dimensional space. So it's all around you and encompassing you, and you are in the middle of it. That's kind of a brain twister. That's not easy to do because film is so two-dimensional.
It is. And, it really is.
And directors who understand the medium, they see it two-dimensionally, right? Every shot is set. You know, they know in their minds what lens they're going to use. It's a long lens. It's going to crop close. It's a wide lens. It's going to see everything. Well, everything basically has to become a wide lens if you're doing it that way. So it's a little bit mind-bending. I saw the CBS, what was it, early show, what a morning show, whatever it was, they did a little piece on that, and it looked kind of exciting to me. It's like you're kind of being put inside of Wizard of Oz.
I know. I was going to ask you, would you want to witness this? I kind of want to.
Yeah, I kind of want to.
Yeah.
Now, there's the other side of it, the other side of the response. The internet responded. How do you think the internet would respond to this kind of thing, Catherine?
Oh, I think they responded negatively.
With vitriol.
Yes, with total vitriol. I mean, glaringly ugly was like what people were saying. I mean, garishly
here's the thing, though,
ugly.
These people haven't seen it yet, have they?
Can we back up a little bit? Because
let's back up, please.
My take on this was very similar to my knee-jerk response to colorization. I didn't know they were doing this. It was some $80 million project with Google engineers. They did it for Vegas, not in my wheelhouse here. But I had the same knee-jerk response to colorization, which in retrospect seems so baby steps compared, you know, to altering someone's artistic expression. And I think it's still horrible. And I was really, really upset and wouldn't even watch a movie. I remember my dad always had that Turner Classic. Remember TCM, Turner Classic movies? And if it was color, I'm like, turn that off. Don't support this. You know, he's like, you're crazy. I mean, I just took it to the extent. So, I mean, am I having the same visceral response? Yeah, I am.
Did your father enjoy them?
Yeah, he did. He enjoyed everything he looked at. He was such a jolly old soul. Yeah, he liked it. He was a little upset by it, but he said it made it more interesting. He thought that it was poorly done. You know, that it was poorly done. Colorization was silly.
It was kind of half-assed.
It was half-assed. And like, if you look at crowd scenes, like the background is always still in black and white. They only and do also, the foreground. Well, most of it is still in black and white. If you look at it closely, it's interesting.
Well, if you think of photos that were colorized in their day when they were shooting black and white, you know, in the late 19th century and even into the early 20th century before we had color film, they would colorize them at the moment they made them, but it was very subtle.
Right, it was like a sepia paint.
It
was
like didn't look real.
No,
and so that's what the film colorization looked like. It was kind of half-assed.
It was half-assed. I think it still remains half-assed. I don't know if they still do it or if they
don't do it. But they could do it. I mean, that's the thing. They could do it now with
AI.
They
could do it now better.
It would probably look a lot more real. Would it pass the uncanny valley? I don't know if it would, but at some point it probably will.
I don't know.
At that point, I don't know if it would be better or worse. I mean, you see a well-shot black and white film, it doesn't really matter that it's black and white. I see a well-shot black and white photo versus color. And sometimes it's better in black and white, a lot of times it's better in color, but sometimes it's better in black and white.
I agree 100%. Speaking of the Uncanny Valley, when you were saying that they would colorize it on the instant, I have an old photo of my great-grandparents on my mother's side who were very poor. They were immigrants from, you know, Italy. And it says they're just sitting there next to each other in this oblong frame, and it's colorized. But it's colorized like it very washy, like very almost watercolory looking.
Right.
And he's wearing, my great grandfather is wearing a suit. And my mom's like, they were dirt poor. She's like, look at that suit. His suit, and I believe portions of her dress, like the lace, are painted on.
Ah.
On the photo. And it's just, I love it. It makes me happy and it breaks my heart at the same time every time I look at it. And that's an interesting point, it reminds me of.
It's an interesting point, though, that even as soon as photography was a thing, as soon as they started taking pictures, they started modifying the pictures.
Exactly.
They weren't windows into reality. They were windows into this creative expression to which you could add whatever you wanted to.
Exactly. I'll send I'll take a picture of it. I'll send you a copy of it.
Maybe you
can use it for show art. No, it's actually very cool.
Okay.
So garishly ugly was one of the responses. So in terms of artistic changing of vision, what is your take on this? Are you okay with this? Does this seem like a slippery slope? I mean, that was kind of where I was going, as I always go with AI generation stuff.
Well, it's the same thing we were talking about last week.
It's
not like it's replacing the original work. The original work still exists. You can go watch that if you want. And I don't have a dome at home, so it's not like I'm going to be watching that.
Exactly.
It's not destroying the original work. It's reinterpreting the original work. That's what we always do. Everything is a remix.
Uh-huh.
And this is baby steps. This is the baby steps into a new way of looking at film. Not necessarily looking at film, but making film. This is a new experience. Like, I don't know if the domes are going to replicate or if this is a one-off. We'll never, just an aberration that the dome was in Vegas and eventually get shut down, maybe because it's not, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But maybe 20 years from now, there are domes like this all over the United States. Maybe they're not quite as big, but maybe this is one way for motion pictures to continue. Because right now, you know, what's the point in going to a movie theater if you can buy a 70-inch TV for $500 at Costco and get a big screen experience at home?
Yes, and just be in your own house without people hacking up along around you.
So taking something old and redoing it is probably not the best way to start, but it's an interesting way to start. And my idea when I was seeing these clips from it is that this may not be perfectly done. It's engaging. It's interesting. I like to see the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
But people in the audience, like young directors, are going to be looking at this and taking notes.
Mm.
It's the first steps. It's the baby steps into a new visual art form. And this is probably a little crude and a little hacky, but you can't avoid that in the first steps.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking like 10, 20 years from now, they'll look back at this and say, it'll be like the colorization argument. Like, that was a good try. Yeah.
You know, you got to feel new stuff out. And maybe this will hold up well. Because, you know, the people who are complaining about it haven't actually seen it yet, so we don't actually know what it's going to be like.
Right. I'm not a big Vegas fan any longer, but I would make the trek to see this. I can't believe I'm saying that. So what did you think of the argument? Because I heard the argument and I acknowledged it and agreed with it to some extent, that the actors who were involved with the film are no longer present to approve or disapprove of any changes to their performance.
It's one performance. It's not like you're changing the person's life.
Okay.
It's one freaking performance. I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, I think they're all dead.
Pretty much. Yeah, when was this film? Like 1930, what?
39, yeah. Directors change performances. Like when it's in editing, they change lines, they change cut scenes. You know, you film the actors in front of you, and then you cut it up to suit your needs as a director.
Exactly. I think they were forgetting about that.
I don't think they're smart enough to understand how films are made. Most of these people. I think they're just reactionary assholes.
So you want to do a road trip? Should we do a road trip to see this?
Maybe. No. I don't know if I could do that.
I certainly can't do it now. It's too hot. But go ahead.
That's some of the quotes, though. Quote, "The sight of the artificially expanded Land of Oz made the commentators uneasy."
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, you know, there are a lot of scenes that are designed to make you uneasy, isn't it? I mean, flying monkeys literally made my 4-year-old run behind the couch. And we had to turn off we had to turn the TV off when we were watching it for the first time.
Agree 100%. I was like that with The Wizard of Oz. I couldn't watch The Wizard of Oz completely until I was probably in college. I don't think I saw, because I couldn't get past the flying monkeys. They really bothered me.
Yeah, I'd like to see what that looked like in you know, when you're surrounded by them. But here's a tip. Do not take your four-year-old to this, because there's no seat he can hide behind. It's 3D. It's
right.
All around them.
That's a good point. That would make someone mental.
Early trauma is suggested to have caused, what's his name, the horror writer, Stephen King, to maybe go a little bit harder than he otherwise would have.
Oh, God.
So, you know, early trauma may be good for kids.
Early trauma. So, yeah, one of the quotes from the article, and a quote from X, they just inserted, is, I can't get over this. Oz just looks so Americanized and mundane. They literally took one of the most visually splendid fantasy lands ever committed to film and turned it into generic Mountain Vistas 101.
Yeah, that sounds like someone who hasn't seen a lot of film. But also, they're literally taking what's there and expanding upon it.
Dorothy might as well have stayed in Kansas.
That's just a stupid, ignorant thing to say, especially since they haven't even seen it. They've seen a couple of outtakes from it. It's just people wanting to get in front of the camera and seem like they're important.
Right. Because overridingly, the criticism I found to be the most interesting was that the casualty, as it were the film's hand-painted backdrops. They said that was what originally added to the otherworldly atmosphere of The Wizard of Oz, the original movie. And so now that it's crisper and generated, it appears to have taken that otherworldly quality away. I don't know. I mean, the jury's out. We're not going to stop any of this. It's like, do you come to Jesus with it and get okay with it? Or do you just continue fighting an unwinnable fight? Because
it's a fight worth winning. And it's not a question of, can we stop it? It will stop itself if it's not any good.
Thank you.
There are fewer super people movies now because they kind of faded out. I mean, they weren't great at the end. There are still some, and they're still making them, but it's not at the clip that it used to be. You know, that we go through these cycles in the 50s and 60s. It was, you know, westerns where you couldn't get a movie made if it wasn't a western. Yeah. And in the 2000s, it was comic book heroes.
Mm-hmm.
These things come and go. But the thing about Twitter, that's the kind of the other thing, is people calling it disgraceful on Twitter. You know what's disgraceful, Catherine?
Tell me.
Still being on Twitter in 2025.
Shit, right?
What are you Nazis doing? Really, what are you doing on Twitter these days? Come on, guys.
I don't.
What are you doing over there? That's despicable.
I know.
That's disgraceful.
And I've just lost 99% of my impetus to even communicate to the nether regions of the internet. I mean, I'm, you know.
Nether regions?
Nether region. I mean, just speaking out there. It's like when I'm on these platforms. I mean, I'm not on Twitter, thank God. I mean, I was off it long before Musk, you know, ruined it. I just don't see any benefit to me to interact with strangers on a daily, hourly basis any longer and deal with the bullshit. I'm just so inundated with bullshit. So I don't know. All the fact that they're still doing that is 10 years ago to me.
Well, on Twitter too.
Yeah, and on Twitter.
Just get the fuck off of Twitter.
Exactly.
But just to wrap it up on this, it's a new medium, as I said. You need to experiment in it. This is an experiment. Is it good or bad experiment? I don't know. We'll see it, though. And directors of tomorrow are watching it and taking notes. Uh-huh. And people, just freaking relax. You don't have to be angry about everything.
Right. I mean, it's a movie, for Christ's sake.
If you don't like it, just move on. Move along. Move along home.
And don't comment unless you've seen it. And, you know, we're commenting.
Oh,
we haven't seen it, but.
I almost forgot one piece of follow-up. So circling back to follow-up, the second piece of follow-up was I felt like I needed to apologize for the BitTorrent explainer from last week. Did I go overboard on that?
Oh, maybe a little bit, but, you know, live and learn. I mean, I learned something, so as long as you're teaching, it was a teaching moment.
But BitTorrent is Lego? You probably think of BitTorrent as a Lego tree, which
I do now,
Okay, well, that's not exactly BitTorrent. So I'm sorry about BitTorrent, but here are some more points that I missed.
No,
No, BitTorrent's dead.
Okay, good. So
should
what's
we rehash
that?
More history?
Sure, please
do. We have
a
few minutes left.
Yeah, we have a few minutes left. Go for it.
The BBC wrote, I don't know why the BBC dredged up a story from 2003 about the blackout in New York City and didn't really seem like they put it in situation as to why they were redoing it now. In 2003, there was a massive blackout in the Northeast. It covered all of New York and parts of Canada and, I don't know, other states like maybe Pennsylvania, Ohio, but who cares? They're not real states.
I think it was like a 20-year anniversary. Like, wasn't it August 14th or something? And it's August 14th.
It was 2003, though.
Oh, 2003. So 20 X amount of years,
can
whatever.
You do the math?
I can't. 22 years.
22, yes.
Yeah, 22 years. But I think it was on August 14th, wasn't it? When I read it.
Sure. I don't know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the thing is, I was there.
I know. Oh, my God.
In New York City. Now, I was living in Texas at the time, but I flew up to New York City because my, at that time, very recently ex-employer was doing a little trade show, and it was with the trade show booth I designed, and I went up out of the goodness of my heart and gave them some free time to help them with the booth.
Okay.
Even though they'd laid me off a couple months before, I did that to try to gin up some good faith with them because I was still trying to get some materials. I was trying to get a laptop or I was trying to get a workstation from them, which they wound up not giving me. So it was kind of a waste of my time and money to try to even gin up any good faith
Goodwill,
with these people.
Uh-huh.
But that's why I was there. And as I was leaving the hall, the exhibit hall, I got on the escalator, and midway down the escalator, it stops.
Oh, wow.
The front of my brain is saying, oh, the power of the building went out. Something in the back of my brain was like, no, this is bigger than just the building.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how, I guess I'm a magic user or something. I know these things without having to know them. And sure enough, I got out and I started walking around and everything was out and people were starting to look around a little bit confused.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that was the start of it. But the BBC, the title of the BBC article is Whether Rich or Poor, It Was the Longest of Nights.
Yes.
Hey, what are you talking about? It was a nothing. It was like a big party in New York.
The photos that they infused into the article kind of are a testament to that. I mean, there's a bunch of people sitting on a curb, like smiling at the camera. No one looks besieged.
There's no looting. There's no rioting. The lights were out. That was about it. Yeah, people stopped. Like, some people got stuck in elevators. That probably wasn't great, but they probably didn't stay in there for a couple hours. They probably got out. The people on the subways got out. Everybody was out. And it wasn't. And they were saying, oh, my God, this intense heat. It wasn't that hot. It was very pleasant evening.
One of the quotes I was just cracking up at was, thousands of stranded commuters were forced to join the ranks of the city's homeless.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch.
Oh.
Because here's what happened with me. So I am, believe it or not, I'm kind of a New Yorker. I was born in Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
And both of my brothers that day were in New York because one lives in New York.
Uh-huh.
And the other one worked in New York.
Okay.
And my sister-in-law also worked in New York at the time. In 2003, my dad was probably still working in New York. And I guess he had retired by that point. But he had been working in New York.
Uh-huh.
So the first thing I did was I called my mom to try to get my brother's number so we could, you know, I could figure out where he was and we could at least get together and maybe figure out how to get out or what we were going to do. I was able to make that call on my cell phone. This is one of the things that would be different today is the cell phone towers went down in about 30 minutes. All gone.
Would they not go down now?
They would not go down as quickly and probably wouldn't be out for as long because they have much better backup now.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
So I got one call and I got his number and found out where he was, but it required a little bit more coordination. And at the time there were still a handful of payphones in the city, and I found a few, and each one of them had dozens and dozens of people in line for them.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
That was basically untenable, but you know, like I said, I'm a New Yorker, I understand how New York is. And so I started thinking about, well, where else would there be phones? And you know, a lot of these tall buildings downtown Manhattan have lobbies, and those lobbies have telephones.
Oh, right.
So I, you know, went in and asked timidly if, you know, could I use your phone? And they said yes.
Uh-huh.
So instead of waiting like 3 hours to get on a payphone,
right?
You know, just went in and got some calls. And I arranged to meet my brother at his lab.
Because
he had a lab in, I think it was Rockefeller. He was working for Columbia, I think, at the time. And I think he had anyways, it was on the east side somewhere. On the east side? I was saying the east side. I'm a New Yorker.
Oh, my Shut God, up. You're a New Yorker.
So then we got together, and he knew my brother's apartment. I'd never been to my brother's apartment. So we walked up because he was in the upper 70s, I think. Nice place.
Uh-huh.
And we got to his building, and his doorman wouldn't let us in.
Why?
Well, he didn't know who we were. Even though, oh, God damn it, if you lined us, three of us up, you could absolutely tell that we were brothers. we're not clones of each other, but we're close enough that, yeah, there's no question these people are brothers. So we never caught up with him that night. And you know, a couple months later, when we were all together again, we asked him where he was, and he couldn't remember.
Oh, no.
It's like, okay, well, that's a lie. Either you were drunk somewhere in a bar,
uh-huh.
or you were hiding out at home, and you didn't want your brothers to be bothering you.
Oh, what do you think it was?
I don't know which one's more.
Oh, you
don't know. Honestly, it's 50-50.
Right.
But, like, how can you not remember where you were at the most famous blackout of your right. lifetime?
Right. That is hilarious.
For that brother, that's not atypical. So, actually, what happened was my eldest brother and I, walked back towards his laboratory because, you know, he had a lab, so we were just going to sleep on the floor of his lab, which I'm assuming most people did. Like, if they were stuck, if you worked in New York and you're stuck in New York, you probably just went back to your office and slept on the floor.
Yeah, why not? It was safe. It was, you know, I don't know how cool it was.
But... like I said, it wasn't that hot. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
And I was inside the building. I was inside the lab. And aside from the experiments breaking out and trying to, you know, mutate me into a zombie or something, God knows what was happening there. Because he was a neurologist, so he's doing neurology experiments. So if any experiments can turn you into a zombie, it's some neurological
right.
thing.
Oh, I hope they didn't do that.
No, I think I'm fine.
Okay, good. Good. So you didn't
anyway,
see fires breaking out?
No, that's just everything was so
like a wildfire in the city.
I went on a little bit too long about this, but yeah, everything on the article was stupid. There were a couple of small fires here and there, but there was no raging blaze across New York City.
Right, and they said that there are like multiple fires daily in New York. So, I mean, it's not like allegedly that's what the article said.
Right.
So the mayor thought it was like egregious enough to declare a snow day, and there was finger pointing about like the breakdown. But
So your
experience was not that horrific. It was actually quite pleasant.
On our way back, we stopped at a restaurant. They didn't have much left. I think I had olives that night for dinner because you know the restaurants were a little overloaded. They had more of a clientele than normal since
exactly.
Hundreds of possibly 100,000 extra people who got stuck in the city.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, there have been a lot of people. They're talking about thousands of people. There are tens of thousands, if not 100,000 uh-huh. people who were probably stuck there. And a lot of them were walking around. A lot of them took the bridge home on foot. And that was crazy to see that. We had organized with my sister-in-law
uh-huh.
that she would drive in on the next morning and pick us up. And on the east side, on the west side, one of the highways. We walked over the highway to one of the exits so that she could pick us up easily. And there was no traffic.
Oh my God.
It was the easiest thing in the world.
Oh my gosh. Well, so the BBC hyped this up.
Oh man. What's the point?
I like your story better.
Dredging up a 22-year-old story and then misreporting it.
I don't know. I don't know if it was the anniversary of it being August 14th coming up or what, but. I was a little confused.
It's August 14th today.
I know. This was published a couple days ago, right?
Yes, yes,
yeah,
it was.
So anyway. Well, that was good. Thank you for that insight.
Okay, I'm glad. Trying to entertain.
Always entertaining. All right. I wish. I know, me too. On that note, I think we can wind it up.
Call
we good?
It a day? Okay.
Yeah, I think we're calling it a day. Okay, take care. Bye.